Welcome to the On Basketball Podcast, the Pick and Troll Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper. Matt Moore, I'm going to be out for about 2 weeks.
I'm just glad it's not longer.
I do actually probably, I don't know, I probably have an MCL sprain that's undiagnosed. I have every other knee injury that's ever happened, so I feel like I can relate to Steph Curry on this.
You're also known as the Greg Oden of Utah, so.
That's true. I've been known as the Greg Oden of Utah, the Greg Oden of NBA writing, and
the Great White Utah Oden?
And
the
Great also,
White Oden of Utah.
So I think someone kind of called me the Councilman Jam of NBA writing the other day, and I thought that was very, apropos.
Yeah, you've been jammed is very.
You've been jammed. So the Warriors are jammed with this MCL sprain, but I guess it could have been a lot worse for Steph Curry, so that's good. It's a grade one MCL sprain, and this turns... I don't think we're doubting they win this first-round series, right? We're just kind of wondering, do the Clippers now have a chance, assuming the Clippers get past the Blazers in round one?
How sad is it that we're not like, man, the Warriors are really in for a fight now? I mean, good God, Houston.
Is this... right.
Just... Every time I think that you cannot get worse, that you cannot embarrass yourself further. Like, this is like you've been walking around all season with fecal matter in your pants.
Right.
Everyone knows it. Everyone just smelled it. And now you're just like, oh, hey, I'm just going to dig it out and then spread all over the front of my pants. Like, that's what you're doing. Have some self-respect, Houston. God.
What's amazing is that when you said put up a fight, I immediately went to the Clippers in my mind and didn't even give Houston a chance. So that probably does say a lot about Houston. I mean, that game, that second half was, it was as encouraging for Golden State as it was frustrating for the Rockets, right? Or not frustrating, like disappointing for the Rockets, because like Draymond Green was possessed in the second half. Klay Thompson was a flamethrower in the second half. Andre Iguodala was fantastic. Like they had some really good moments of guys just stepping up. And at the same time, like, is there anything we can say about Houston other than your metaphor of them having fecal matter all over their pants now? I've been done with them, so yeah. That's not anything new, but I don't know. It's like you're done with a team and then they keep reinforcing all of this stuff and it, for some reason, it's bringing up extra frustrations and it makes me just want to ignore this Houston team and kind of like, I don't know, praise this Warriors team even more for the way they responded in Houston. But yeah, like you've had this great point all season of like this Houston team is just annoying enough to stick around for stuff. They were just annoying enough to make the playoffs. They're just annoying enough to win a game in round one. Can they push this more than five?
No.
No?
They're going okay. into Oracle.
Okay, never mind.
They're going into Oracle, and they quit in that second half versus the Warriors, who didn't have Steph.
Who suddenly did. Like, I think there's a huge mental aspect. Like, you can say, like, the Warriors were resilient, and they rallied around this. I also think it very much could have been if the Rockets come out there and smack them with, like, an 8-0 run to start the third quarter, shouldn't that induce some panic?
Yeah. Yeah. Now, all of a sudden, the Warriors are frustrated, and they're like, can anything go right for us? Like, what is happening? Like, why can't anything go right? Like, what, you know, why are we the Cavs all of a sudden? What is happening? And instead, like, they just were like, oh, you guys want it more? Oh, okay. All right. How much time is left? God, this thing is so long. Like, they're just the worst. And it's not personal. Like, I love the Houston Rockets franchise. I am a disciple of Daryl Morey. I like Corey Brewer, for crying out loud. I like KJ McDaniels. I love Trevor Ariza. I like a lot. I've defended Dwight. I call James Harden really fun to watch. And I still believe that when he's cooking, like he was in that first half.
Yeah.
But they're collective. Like, how? When Curry goes off the floor, you could say, like, well, that's, you know, it's an injury. Yeah, but these guys are ultra competitive.
Right.
I mean, they are ultra, even the Rockets. Less so than most college teams, but generally speaking, they're all competitors. How does James Harden not go to that huddle and be like, look, we're down 2-1. This game has been tough. They've had our number. He's out. They are just a team now. We can do this. We can beat them. How do you not get your guys rallied up? How do you let them just go out and just get stomped into the ground in that kind of a situation. We're talking a lot about the Rockets. Anyway, they're done. So Curry's going to be out 2 weeks, which...
At least 2 weeks.
And in at least 2 weeks, he's going to be reevaluated. Okay, so Dan Feldman from NBC had a great point. Like, the Warriors' entire thing. It's funny because they always say that. Like, he'll be reevaluated in 2 weeks. That's a lie. Like, he'll be reevaluated in about 15 minutes.
Every hour on the hour from like, now until this.
We'll have nanobots crawling over that MCL doing updates on trying to repair it. Like, I'm surprised that they're not doing, like, nanobot repair surgery on that right now. They will check him every day to see how you feeling.
Currently on a flight to Germany.
Right. Like, it's so he could be back sooner. It's not impossible.
Right.
I think they have to be careful, though, right? Like, the problem with this injury is, okay, you sprained it, which is, it's either a stretching or a small tear, depending on the severity. I think the grade one means it's just stretched.
Right.
But if he puts more pressure on it too early, it could pop, and then all of a sudden you get the torn.
Right.
So you got to be careful with it. Like, there is danger in playing on it. Some injuries are stuff like, not going to hurt you to play on it. This is not one of those things. So he's got to be careful. We're still trying to figure out, to get an answer from the league on, okay, when does round two actually start?
Right. Because it's not set dates like conference finals and finals, right? Like, there is some fluidity to it.
Well, there is, but there's fluidity with the conference finals and finals as well. They've always said, like, oh, it's this date, and then there's a move-up date, like in the event that the series end early.
Right, yeah, those are generally extreme situations, right?
So, I think last year it happened. I think last year they moved them up.
But even last year, like, wasn't it like a week in between conference finals and the finals?
Yeah, because it was 5-4.
Right.
So that's when your move-up date becomes helpful, so you're not sitting around for 2 weeks. The NBA's official semifinal start date, this is on their website that they have provided to the media. They released like this key date thing that I pore over because I'm a huge scheduling geek, is May 2nd. That's Monday, May 2nd is the first day of the conference semifinals. A possible move-up date for April 30th or May 1st. I'm expecting Spurs-Thunder, if the Thunder take care of business tonight, to start on Saturday, April 30th.
Right.
Problem. Blazers Clippers. If the Blazers win tonight and the Clippers win game 5 and the Blazers win game 6 back in Portland, game 7 is Sunday, May 1st. They're not going to have the Clippers play or Blazers conceivably in a game 7 on Sunday and then turn around and play on a back-to-back for the first game of a semifinal series.
That seems unlikely.
On Monday. They're tough on them,
but not that tough.
Don't think they'll do that. So you're probably looking at the latest being Tuesday, May 3rd. So that's a full now. That's 8 days. So you're already 8 days. You're more than halfway through his recovery period.
Right.
So if you chop it off, you say, all right, it's supposed to be 2 weeks. They do an evaluation. Let's say it's 12, and he's back early. So now you're only really seriously. You're only talking about game 3 or 4 here. Tim Kawakami, on the other hand, from the Bay Area, great reporter, had talked to somebody and the word is apparently the first 4 games, no. 5 and 6, maybe.
All right, Matt, just because Steph Curry is not going to be in these games doesn't mean we can't be at these games as fans. And we're going to get tickets through SeatGeek because it's the best place to buy tickets online for sporting events and concerts. It's so easy to use. The great thing about SeatGeek, they're going to pool all the tickets from all these other sites. They're going to put them into one place, and you never miss a deal, and you always have the time to find them, and it's so easy to use because if the ticket price falls, they're going to let you know. They give you an alert to the upcoming event. You go scoop that $80 ticket up for $60 or whatever it ends up being. You've saved some money, and you got in ahead of other people, and that's really the best thing about SeatGeek is how easy it is and how available everything is at just the click of a button. And you don't even have to use the click of a button. You can use your smartphone because our listeners get $20 off, a $20 rebate off their first SeatGeek purchase by going to the app store of your smartphone. You're going to download the free SeatGeek app. You're going to go to the settings tab. You're going to click add a promo code. What is that promo code? It is IEYE, as in Ion Basketball Podcast. The SeatGeek will then send $20 to you after you've made your first ticket purchase. All you got to do is download the free SeatGeek app and enter the promo code I today, and you can start scooping up them tickets.
I will go ahead and make my prediction.
Okay.
You ready for this?
Let's do it.
The Clippers are going to win game one. The Warriors are going to win game two. The Clippers are going to win games three and four to go up 3-1, going back to Oakland for game five. Steph Curry returns in game five, and the Clippers blow another 3-1 series lead.
I do enjoy me some chaos, so I'm in on this prediction. May I offer a prediction?
Go ahead.
Steph Curry comes back in game three.
Woo!
To send the Blazers into an 0-3 hole.
Woo!
How about that? I don't believe any of that, but let's get nuts.
You're trying to story top me? Is that what you're trying to do here?
I think I did. I think I just tried to story one up you.
Story topper? So I wrote five things to know kind of about this. I wrote five things to know, four things to know last night, and then five things to know today.
There are
I wrote
nine
a lot of things to know about this situation. I have nine things for you to know about this injury situation if you search on CBSSports.com. As I was writing, this one thought did dawn on me, and it is the one that this one really stuck out to me because it's not something we think about in the wake of an injury. And it's they cannot afford another injury.
Right.
Draymond can't go down. Klay can't go down. Livingston can't go down. Iguodala can't go down. Bogut, maybe.
Maybe. I don't know.
They can't lose Barbosa. They can't lose Barbosa. They need Barbosa now.
I'm not sure they could lose Ian Clark.
Where are we?
I think we're in Summer League.
they can lose James Michael McAdoo. Let's agree on that.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. They could bring back Jason Thompson and lose him. That wouldn't be a problem.
They can't afford any of those key guys, though. If Iguodala suffers a sprained toe. Sam Espandiari actually mentioned this on Twitter. He said, thankfully, the Warriors got Curry insurance off the bench, and it's a picture of Mo Spates. If Mo Spates hurts his hamstring again, they're in serious trouble.
Yeah.
They cannot lose. And it's weird because they're such an offensive machine, but how often do we talk about this? It's what Curry does to the defense. It forces you to blitz him at 30 feet.
Yeah.
And if you don't have to do that, because a lot of it is Draymond can actually run point. He can actually run in the pick and roll and not as the screener. They can still create a number of things, but Draymond's not going to come off the screen, spot up and launch and shoot 45%. That's not happening.
Right. I mean, they do fun things where they can still run some weird stuff with Draymond, and they can post up Livingston and post up Draymond and run stuff out of that. But I mean, you saw it in game three. It worked in game four, but you saw it in game three where Klay, I mean, they used Klay as an initiator a lot, and it did not go well. Granted, it was against a semi-motivated Rockets team, so that helped kind of curtail that stuff. But they really do need Draymond or Livingston or Iguodala as that playmaker, and not so much Klay. So if you can force Klay into being the guy, not as a scorer, but just as a playmaker, that can that can really throw off this Warriors team.
Losing the MVP is bad. That's a bad thing.
That may be the title of this podcast.
Losing the MVP is bad.
Right.
So, however, I will also say this. Let's go ahead and assume the Clippers win. They've been the better team throughout the series, but I will say we're only three games in, and we thought that some of these series are, after two games in Atlanta, it was, oh man, the Celtics have no answers. And then the Celtics, I'm not entirely sure how, but they found answers. We can get to that later. And now the series is tied. So, it wouldn't shock me for the Blazers. I mean, I picked the Blazers in six in this series. It would not shock me for them to win tonight. And then the Clippers have to go long there. And then the next round, I said this on Twitter, I really believe it. The Clippers are going to be in a lot of pressure. There's going to be a lot of pressure to beat Golden State in Oracle when they're going to be playing really emotionally without Steph.
Well, I agree with that because I do also think all right, if you're the Clippers going into a series with a healthy Warriors team, no one expects you to do anything. So you can play a little looser, right? Now, maybe if you go up in that series unexpectedly, let's say you're facing a healthy Warriors team and the Clippers go up 2-1. Well, now all of a sudden you have some pressure to complete this thing. But if you're going into it and we don't know when Curry's coming back, every game essentially becomes a must-win for the Clippers because you can't waste those opportunities without Curry on the floor.
You want to go up 3-0 and have them really thinking, like, do we want to bring Curry back for this?
Right.
Like, that's where you want to get to, is you want it to be 3-0 and have it be, do we risk putting Curry back on the floor and having him risk tearing his MCL when all they have to do is win one more game?
Right.
With two games at home. You know, if you do that, then all of a sudden it changes. I do want to get into this, and I know that, like, we're not big on these kind of narratives, but I think it's at least talked about. I'm trying to, like, really kind of consider the whole, and this is playing ahead here. I still think there's a very good chance that the Golden State Warriors win the title. Westgate Superbook in Las Vegas also agrees with me. They are still a 4-5 favorite to win the NBA title.
That's, I mean, I don't know if it's crazy, but that's just, it's impressive.
It's impressive.
Yeah.
So
there's some really good teams left.
There are some really good teams left, but I still think, like, if you ask me today who's going to win the NBA title, I am still going to say Warriors. If you say, how confident are you, I'm going to be like, not as confident as I was yesterday. But I would still say them above everybody else, because, one, like, they caught a break here, right? Like, it wasn't torn. It was bad, but not the worst it could be.
Right.
You know?
It's kind of the best it can be, really.
Yeah, it's the best it can be, realistically. They're not facing the Thunder in the second round. Like, imagine if OKC was walking in here in the second round.
Right.
Like, that, then it would be like, uh-oh, that would be bad. But the Clippers, you're kind of like, you guys...
We'll wait and see. We're going to wait and see approach with you.
To lose the series. Let's say they don't win. We're just looking ahead, but let's say they don't win. Last year, the Warriors and their fans didn't want to hear anything about injuries to Cleveland. Right? Like, no asterisk.
Right.
We won. We were the best team. We won. If Curry goes down, then what? Is one Curry worth Kyrie more than Kyrie Irving and Kevin Love? I kind of think he does, but yes, I'm also kind of like...
He absolutely is. And that's not... I don't think that's a shot at them.
Yeah. At the end of it, like, I kind of started, like... I wrote about this a little bit at the end of things, and now in terms of the whether it's fair or not, the other teams are going to see this as an opportunity.
Yeah.
Like, all of a sudden, like, there was kind of a sense of, like, man, we're not, like... You have to beat the Warriors 4 times. How are you going to do that? But now it's like, hey, we may not even be playing.
Yeah, so, I don't think this changes anything for the Spurs. I think they always go into it with the same approach, right? Because they're dead inside and they're robots, and like they approach everything the right way. But yeah, if you're the Clippers, if you're the Thunder, even if he gets healthy, you made a good point in one of your 9 things to know was that, like, he's not going to be 100%. Right? Like, the rest of the playoffs. Like, the idea that he's going to get to 100% is just very, very low. And so because of that, you have to think that, I don't know, you have to think that even if they get to a matchup with the Cavaliers and the Cavs are even semi-healthy or all the way healthy, that all of a sudden, like, they've got to go into it with a better mindset, even if he's been back for 6 games or whatever.
Yeah. And I think from their perspective, it's you can only play who's in front of you, you know?
Yeah,
and,
true.
And, like, injuries are part of the game, and everybody knows that. And, like, I hope that if that were to happen, the Warriors would be – because it's funny how the dynamic is kind of interesting, because the Warriors can either be like, well, look, we didn't want to take anything away from what we did last year when the Cavaliers got hurt. Like, we were proud of our team. Like, they should be happy that they won. It's unfortunate for us. We feel like we would have won, but they won the title. They should be excited. And then on the flip side of that is everybody wanted to take things away from us last year, so I'm going to take things away from them.
Right.
So that is looking ahead a little bit, but that's going to be like a whole narrative if they struggle. Clay is a really interesting component here, because you had really commented on how much he struggled versus Houston. Like, man, he just doesn't play well against them. And you would think that with Curry out, it would be, oh man, all they got to do is guard him, and then he goes off.
Yeah, I mean, they could. It's like they forgot he was good. It's like they just thought, like, oh, maybe this is Brandon Rush in a Klay Thompson outfit. Like, maybe that's what this is. And he just was open, and even when he was lightly contested, it was just, like, that was the Klay Thompson we're used to.
I wrote about this a little bit last night, that... with him, a lot of it is he's not necessarily – and correct me if I'm wrong on this. I don't feel like he's necessarily a great ISO player. I think he's – I kind of actually compared him to to Reggie Miller a little bit, in that he's a dominant scorer, because Miller was dominant, but they ran him off screens and got him open looks and got him moving. You know, teams would overextend and he would get by him, and then he would get to the rim and he would pop around screens and find open looks. Like, that to me feels like a pretty decent comparison.
Yeah, I like that.
So
yeah,
there
I like
are still
that
ways
that
they can do it. The problem is, like, Draymond's going to have to quarterback.
Yeah, he definitely does. I mean, Iguodala can do it. Can quarterback too.
True.
I mean, I don't know for like extended periods, but he can be that playmaker.
Yeah. Yeah, Iguodala is playing he's just been, I don't really understand how good he and Leandro Barbosa are. Like, it does not make sense to me.
Well, he makes more sense to me than Barbosa does.
See, I'm kind of like, I don't know, at least Barbosa was always skilled. He just hasn't gotten old.
I mean, since he blew out his knee, he wasn't exactly Barbosa, right?
Right.
And to keep, like, he was on the scrap heap at the, like, when the Warriors picked him up.
And yet he, like, never misses. Ever. Ever, 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 ever. So, like... And then Iguodala's the entire thing was, he can't shoot. Like, he couldn't shoot at all. And then, like, all right, he's knocking down threes. Sure. But now it's like, he's, like, knocking down threes off the dribble.
Right.
Like, I said this yesterday, if you put Tony Allen on the Warriors and no training camp, no time with the coaches, I really believe he would just step out there and knock down 35% of his threes. Just, Tony Allen, knocking him down from the outside. It sucks that I do want to make this clear. I try and point this out whenever there's an injury. We're worried about the playoffs and about, like, what if the series isn't as good and what if the Warriors get knocked out and what does this do for, like, the legitimacy of the title and how does Golden State adjust? Steph Curry got hurt. Like, he's in pain. He woke up this morning and was like, ow. And that sucks. There's a very human side of this that we tend to overlook. And, like, you know, like, Riley's dad is hurt. And that sucks.
But Matt... he is getting the best medical care possible, and he makes millions of dollars. So, he's probably not hurting like you and I would hurt.
By the way, if you get a chance, listeners, you should really go find our article from yesterday. Zach and I did a back and forth that...
This is saying something. I've never been so stupid in my life.
Originally, the plan was we were going to do like a back and forth about the narrative idea of should the Warriors have played him? Like, should they have just sat him for this game? He was coming off the ankle injury. Did they endanger him by putting him on the floor? We both agree that that was stupid. I brought it up, and you were like, wait, why would we do this? That was like to torch it. And you're like, oh, okay, never mind then.
Yeah, as soon as you said we were going to torch this idea, I was like, I'm in. I'm completely into this.
Yeah, like I through the internet, I could feel you lock in.
I sent out a tweet that said, lock in, EOP Nation.
And so... I sent you over like the first kind of piece of it in Slack.
You had very thoughtful, like very thoughtful, well placed ideas to examine in this whole scenario.
And you just slept into morning talk show sports debate host. You donned. You know what made me think of that Free Darko print where it's Chris Paul taking off the wolf costume?
Yeah.
That's what it reminded me of, is you just, like, donning this farcical hot take machine.
My eyes rolled back in my head, and I blacked out, and then all of a sudden we had a post. That's how that happened.
And I'm not sure our editors knew what to do with it, but it was great.
Thank you.
So definitely go read that about how stupid the idea is that they should have kept him out. Did the Spurs stand to benefit most from this? Or did the Clippers?
Can I say the Thunder?
Mm.
With the caveat that obviously they have to get past the Spurs. But if they get past the Spurs, I think the Thunder benefit from this more than any other team. Because I guess I'm still hedging against, one, this, you know, Curry only missing a couple of games, and two, the Clippers not being the Clippers in the second round, right? Like, for whatever reason, whether you think they're flawed or you think they just have bad luck, or you think that they, you know, they're prone to collapse or whatever. Enough weird stuff has happened with them over the last 4 years, 5 years in the playoffs that it's just kind of like, at this point, I'm just in a wait and see approach. Do you think the Spurs? Do you think the Cavs? The Cavs may be the smartest answer to that, right?
Here, I'm just gonna go, I'm gonna completely turn this around.
Okay.
The Warriors benefit the most.
Ooh.
This is stupid. I can't figure.
Now who's looking for a TV show?
I can't follow this through. Although I will say this. So Marcus Thompson's column postgame yesterday from the Bay Area News Group and Ethan Sherwood Strauss's former friend of the program, now hated enemy for ESPN.com, both had a similar vibe, and they were very emotional. Like, you could, they would be played, like, they would be printed over a montage that was set in like a sepia tone if it were in a movie,
right?
Like, really dramatic music playing with probably trumpets, I think, about like the how the Warriors just like rallied around Curry, and how Draymond like hugged his friend and said, "We got you," and then went out and just beat the pants off this feces laden, spineless,
feces covered
Warrior Rockets team. But what we said about them the entire time, though, this team has a mutant gene to manufacture disrespect.
They do.
And if Curry is listed out, and they come out with all those expert predictions, they're going to be on our site, as they're going to be on every site, and there's all these people taking the... It doesn't even matter if it's half and half. Like, they'll just, like, cut out everyone that picked the Warriors, and they'll just be blank, and all it will show are the people that picked the Clippers. And they will use that.
That's true.
And they're dangerous when that happens. I mean,
it's funny. I mean, you know, they get made fun of, and I guess you should be made fun of for some of the ways that they justify these slights, but, man, if it works, we didn't have a problem with Jordan doing it. Granted, it was a different media environment, but...
I had a problem with Jordan doing it.
We kind of laud him for it, right? Of like, he'd take any disrespect. Like, look at his Hall of Fame speech. I love Jordan about, you know, for that and many other reasons. And it's the same reason I really appreciate this Warriors team. Is like, it's hard to be that petty. It really is.
I'm way more into the whole Spurs thing of just being like hyper reasonable.
Oh, yeah, I mean, I'm into that too. I also look at those, like, look at the Warriors petty and how they channel it versus like Doc Rivers petty.
True.
I kind of like the Warriors petty.
True.
If I had to pick, I'd go Spurs reasonable. But if you're gonna be petty, be Warriors petty.
This is like the Macy's versus JCPenney of petty.
Sure.
That's what this is.
Absolutely.
All
right, let's do quick hitters around the rest of the
day. Yeah, well, we have more news.
Oh, we have more news?
We have more news.
What do we have?
Byron Scott.
Oh, right.
Looking for a new gig.
And Derek Fisher has expressed interest, apparently, in taking this Lakers job.
I posted that on Twitter this morning. I posted the link, and the words D'Angelo Russell just flooded.
Yeah.
Just, I'm surprised D'Angelo Russell wasn't trending for a small period this
morning. That'll happen. All right, so the right, I mean... The two seasons they had Byron Scott were the two worst seasons in franchise history.
The worst.
The two worst seasons in franchise
history. They were 30th and 29th in defensive rating the last 2 years.
Right, but he's a defensive mind coach. Or he was when he had Jason Kidd to run the world. This is obviously the right move. The real question is not like, should this have happened? It's what happens next.
Yeah. And
I mean, they missed out on Thibodeau.
Yeah, and they missed out on Brooks.
Yeah.
Who I actually thought would have been the best fit for them based on where the roster is.
Yeah.
I think that to close the book on Byron, the thing I kept coming to when I was thinking about it and I was going to write a column, but they got ahead of me, was it's not so much whether or not you think he's done a good job or a bad job. It's whether or not you think someone else can do a better job.
Yeah.
And you can't argue that somebody would not do a better job than Byron. So... The options now are kind of interesting. They're going to talk to Walton. That's who they're going to get an interview with. That makes a lot of sense.
I'm on
about this. I want you to share with the reader, with the listeners, what you can about the Walton situation.
Yeah, I think that there is this idea that because he had a 24-0 start with the Warriors, that he's going to jump onto this, you know, the cash out approach of assistant coaching and just go, you know, go get the first job. He'll get paid what, $6-7 million a year. And then he'll go be a coach and then hopefully he's good. I don't think he approaches it this way. And I don't think the entire like organization approaches it this way with Walton. Like I'm fully prepared to be wrong here, but I think he's going to stick around. I think he's going to stick around for at least a year, maybe 2 years, and make sure that he's not, like, jumping on the first opportunity to become a coach, but jumping on the opportunity to, like, become a great coach or become a sustainable coach. I think it's going to be sort of Spurs-esque in that, like, I don't think he's going to stick with Steve Kerr for 19 years like Mike Budenholzer did, but I think he's interested in developing as a coach and not just becoming a coach, which I think there's a huge difference.
You talk to people, so I kind of lean towards you. If it outside of that kind of more perspective on it, the thing that I wind up coming back to is there are only 30 NBA jobs.
Right.
You don't know when one's going to open, and there's a lot of money involved. There's a lot of money involved in this. The jump from assistant coach to head coach is astronomical.
For sure.
On top of that, the Lakers job only comes up. Well, it comes up more often than you think since 2011.
Right.
But generally speaking, like you genuinely cannot expect them to be terrible forever. They're too good of a franchise.
Right. I mean, too much pride. Here's where I'll hedge, but it's a hedge I actually believe in, is that I do think the Lakers job could sway him, right? Because it's the Lakers, because he played there, because of the chance to make the Lakers great again. Not to channel that kind of a phrase, but I think that's the one thing. But I think for the most part, I just don't think he's in a rush to become a coach just to become a coach. And I think that knowing the lay of the land, knowing how often there is turnover, I agree with you. There are only 30 jobs in the league, but it feels like 6 of those jobs become available every year in some way or another. And so I think because of that, plus, you know, I don't know what his financial situation is, but I'm imagining he's not hurting. That will help him, you know, he doesn't need to jump on the money necessarily.
The name I like a lot, and this makes a lot more sense to me. So everyone said, oh, the timing, like the Warriors went up 3-1, but their series isn't over yet. They still can't interview Luke. You know who they can interview now? Torre Messina from the San Antonio Spurs.
Ooh.
And that's a really, he was an assistant coach in LA. So they've got experience with him.
Yeah.
The international flavor is always good. He's a guy that had, the way I've always thought of Messina is he's like David Blatt if he didn't need to tell everybody how great he was all the time.
Sure.
He's won just as much. He's been as successful. He's considered as much of a genius. And he decided to take a job where he learned under Greg Popovich versus taking the job working for Dan Gilbert. So it tells you a little bit about the differences in the decision-making there.
Right.
I think Messina would be a really great hire. Ken Berger's got a column up on listing some of the other choices.
May I offer my prediction?
Yes.
Mama, there goes that coach.
You think so?
I don't trust this organization right now to make good choices.
Here is an underrated plot line that probably needs to be written about at some point. So word is that Jeannie Buss has nothing to do with this hire. That she wasn't behind the Byron firing. She didn't have anything to do with it. She's hands off. Let me kind of put how that can be. There are only two ways that that's existing. One is that Jeannie Buss genuinely is lying, that this is entirely her, and that they're covering tracks to make sure that it doesn't seem like Jeannie is the one pulling the strings now, and that Jim Buss is effectively neutered in his power role within the Los Angeles Lakers. That one doesn't seem likely. Doesn't seem like that kind of thing.
Yeah, I agree.
What this does seem like to me is that Jeannie Buss is very much handing the entire rope to him to hang himself, that she is wiping her hands and being like, you make the choices, do what you need.
You've got to get to the second round.
Yeah, Ramona Shelburne reported that apparently, though, that I knew this was going to happen, that apparently the bar is shifting,
mm-hmm.
that it's now, oh, as long as they improve. And I'm like, but you just said you got to get them. Like, you said you made a big deal to the fans about, no, like we have to get back to being the Lakers and contending. Contending was the first word. And then you're like, well, I consider that to be a strong second round, which, okay, sure. The Hawks are going to make the second round, maybe. Does that mean that if the Celtics make the second round, are they contending? And now it's, oh, well, things have really happened differently. And now, and I'm like, how much are we going to do this? To me, it does seem like she's very much, I'm going to back off. And then if this team is not going to move forward because I don't think it will, I'm going to ask everybody to take over. The problem with that is they're not picking the coach, and you're not going to hire somebody new after you just fire Byron and are still paying for Byron and then fire the new guy and then have to bring in a third guy and pay all the money to all those coaches. That's not a very sound financial move. So,
I mean, I do think that, like, she isn't the president of basketball ops, right? Like, she still runs this thing for the most part. But I do think like there's some, I don't know, plausible deniability, which I think you're kind of getting at in the first place with that second option. But like, I kind of think that's the way it needs to go. I still think like she's setting her brother up to fail.
I had a couple of interesting ideas for some options for them. Mm-hmm. One, Nancy Lieberman.
I don't think so.
Hall of Famer.
Credentials are great. I don't think she's had the time as an assistant coach to make that a viable option. Same with Becky Hammon. Like, some people are like, hey, they could be a coach really soon. Like, Becky Hammon's not even, like, first row of assistants.
Right.
And Nancy, like, hasn't been doing it that long. Like, I don't think it would be a mistake necessarily. I think, though, if you're going to get this first female coach hire correct, there's just going to have to be more of an MBA resume, even if that's not fair.
I think Lieberman's got a pretty extensive history. Like, she's worked.
She does, yeah. I mean, she's smart. Like, she knows.
And
the
she's
game.
Done with. She's worked with Team USA.
Yeah, absolutely.
She's done all this stuff. So she comes in, I think, with a lot of credibility. I almost put Hammond on the list, but Hammond doesn't. Like you said, like, she just doesn't have the experience.
Right.
This is a really underrated name, and this is the problem with the LA job, right? It's like, you have to make a splash, and I really think it's a bad way to go about it. Like Ken mentioned in his column, like, a bunch of really good assistants, like Nick Nurse or Nate Tibbetts.
Right.
Either one of those assistants would be excellent choices.
Right. Jaron, I mean, I'm high on this Jaron Collins train.
Yeah. One name that I really like is Nate McMillan.
Yeah, I don't mind that. I think he's good.
Yeah, longtime assistant, has been a head coach, former player, tough guy. It's like a transition from Byron to, you know, intelligence. Like, it's a smooth move there, kind of an evolving way forward.
Someone
Kevin
said,
Ollie, I don't know. I mean,
the college to pros thing is tough, right?
I don't trust it.
Yeah.
Just don't. I don't know why, you know, not to go back on this, but, you know, Billy Donovan, I don't think Billy Donovan has done well in his first year. I think that he's – I like talking to Billy Donovan, and I like some of his ideas, and I like his approach. But from a results standpoint
– We haven't seen enough yet, right? And I mean that both in the – we haven't seen him be a coach enough in the NBA, and we haven't seen enough results.
Yeah. So I think that's complicated. And then Fred Hoiberg was a disaster. So at least in the first year, it's just been bad.
Right.
It'll be interesting to see what they do, but you know, they're going to be under pressure to make a splash. There's going to be a lot of talk. That's why I do agree with you, though. Mark Jackson makes a lot of sense.
He's a splash. He's had success. He's
tough. Win now.
Yeah. Yeah. He paves the way for Steve Kerr in a couple of years. All right, I'm holding the 9 week old French bulldog, who is dying to get out of my hands and go pee somewhere in the apartment. So let's do a quick hitter around the first round.
All right, real quickly. Cavs
sweep the Pistons.
Cavs sweep Pistons. Reggie Jackson was not fouled on the final play. They talked about it in the last 2 minute report.
Right.
Good run by Detroit. It gives them momentum going into next year. They pushed that team. The Cavs took care of business in 1-4 games. I'm still a little bit freaked out by the fact that the every game seems so close.
Yeah.
I don't understand how the Cavs could look so good and not wind up being up 20 for a lot of the series. They blew them out in game two, but overall, it's been back and forth. Got to see more of them in the second round, but the good news is I think they're going to get a favorable matchup no matter which team wins.
Agreed. And I think you credit Detroit for fighting the way they did. You credit Stan Van Gundy for coaching the way he did. Yeah, I'm with you. Like, Cavs should have won these games by more. They didn't. I don't think it's a disaster, but it's interesting.
Tobias Harris needs to look at that series and figure out what he needs to do going into the summer. Like, yeah. How has he got to get better? Because he's got to look at that thing and say, I mean, like, Stan Van Gundy needs to make it clear, like, you need to improve in these areas. We need you to beat this. Like, I think you can do this. That's why we got you. I need you to be this good. Because yeah. They really need either Rashard Lewis or Hedo Turkoglu. He's got to be one of those guys.
Yep.
Hawks Celtics, I don't understand.
I don't know. I don't know.
And Celtics fans think I hate them, and I get why they feel that way. I really do understand, Celtics fans, why you feel that. I don't. I actually really love this team. I love Jonas Jerebko, Jay Crowder. Isaiah Thomas is such a – just a badass. I love Marcus Smart. Like, him stepping up is so great. I love Amir Johnson. I like Brad Stevens. I love the crowd. I love the history. I think it's awesome. None of this makes any sense.
It doesn't.
Atlanta Hawks missed 30 uncontested shots yesterday.
I mean, Paul Millsap went for what, 45?
Yeah.
And it did, and the Celtics. I think this is headed towards the home team's just going to be awesome in this series. But sometimes that's all that happens.
Because the Hawks' home court is not a great advantage.
Right. I mean, maybe it's the comfort. Maybe it's the nightlife for the opposing team. I don't know what it is, but that may just be the case.
Yeah, I don't understand how Marcus Smart, a 25% shooter, is all of a sudden just lights out from the outside.
Right.
And the Hawks, and everyone's like, well, they're letting these shooters. I mean, you're not worried about Teague, 40% shooter. You're not worried about Al Horford, 34% shooter. You're not worried about Bazemore, 36% shooter. Like, these guys are good shooters.
Right.
The Hawks have shooters and are creating great looks with execution. That's what's driving me crazy. And I got to step away from it because I'm getting freaked out the same way I did in that Warriors-Nugget series all those years ago, where I was like, this doesn't make any sense. Like, Draymond Green is a 45% EFG shooter. How is he shooting 70% EFG? Sometimes this stuff just happens.
Right.
And that's making me crazy because I look at the execution. I'm like, but the shot should go in, and it does not, because that's basketball. Sometimes the shot just doesn't go in. It just seems to happen with the Hawks a lot.
It does. Speaking of, the Heat's offense apparently isn't the greatest thing in the NBA anymore.
Turns out they're human. Jeremy Lin, man.
Jeremy Lin can play. Frank Kaminsky had a great game. I like the way Cody Zeller's playing for the most part, even though he's overmatched against Whiteside. You know, I still think this Hornets team is screwed because of the Batum injury, but they made it work in Game 3. We'll see if they make it work in Game 4.
Yeah. Going to be tough, I think, for them. What else happened over the weekend?
We've got...
Blazers alive.
Oh, we've got Raptors-Pacers?
Raptors cannot get away from themselves. They just cannot get past this.
As long as they get past the first round, though, it's okay, right? Like, however they do it, as long as they break through that wall, they're fine.
Yeah, I don't know. Going 7 games against the Pacers in the first round would not be a good look.
It'd be better look than going 7 against the Nets in the first round and losing.
True. It would be an improvement. I guess that's true.
Or getting swept by Randy Whitman.
Peace out, Memphis. I think Conley resigns, but he may not. The Spurs are good. They didn't need to try in the series.
And they're just... Spurs are better than much better than a hapless Grizzlies roster that's left.
Dallas, everyone's kind of looking at OKC as being kind of the bullies, and I feel like Dallas is the one that's really trying to egg them on and get them into the, like, to kind of battle with them. I feel like
I think they're dragging them into these mind games.
Yeah.
I mean, I wrote about that briefly, like, just like the Thunder, like, we know you're the better team. No one's disputing that. Like, go in the series and get out of this crap because you need better mental focus for the next round.
I guess, but my only thing on that is that as much as it's like, yeah, but OKC's getting dragged into it, like, they're barking back at them and they're yelling and they're getting flagrants and they're getting technicals. I'm like, yeah, they're also winning. Like, the one game they kept...
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
Like they're up 3-1. Like, if they'd lost game 4, I would be in a much different... I would feel much, much differently about it. But I'm also just like... I think the Thunder are like, no, we're going to bark back at you and we're going to get involved in all this nonsense and we're going to actually make jump shots, which is something you can't do. So,
well, here was my point on that, is that it's not that the next round the Spurs are going to drag them into these same mental games.
Right.
It's that when you get frustrated against the Spurs, they just dismantle you. And it's not like, we're barking at you, you bark at us, we got in your head. It's you're not handling your frustrations well. You have to learn how to handle those frustrations.
And it's really hard. I've talked to a couple teams that have faced the Spurs about this in series. It's frustrating when you're trying to find some sort of source of emotional motivation.
Right.
And the Spurs do not let you. You can't not like them. They're so respectful. They're right. Like, hey, how are you?
Right, exactly.
They're not like, hey, but they're just like, hello. We are here to play basketball.
Yeah.
I hope you do not get injured. Good luck to you, sir. That's it. Like, that's all they do. So, going to have to manage that.
You said Blazers are alive. I think they have a real chance of pushing the series.
You think so?
I do. I just think if you keep Lillard and McCollum going, and I love the way they use Mason Plumlee in Game 3, if you can keep those three things, it becomes coin flip-ish, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if Blake Griffin becomes good again, which he was not for most of Game 2 and all of Game 3, if he becomes good again, it's a different story, but we just haven't seen consistency there.
Yeah, I mean, I picked Blazers in six. Tonight, to me, decides it. If the Clippers come out and out-execute them and lock them, especially if they lock them back down again, then the Clippers are going to have it's over, and the Blazers are going to have big questions in terms of, we've built everything around Dame and to a degree CJ. Like, we got to go get a front court weapon.
Yeah, there's just no way the Clippers can blow a 3-1 series lead against a jump shooting team. I agree.
Well, thankfully, Josh is Mo Harkless going to be Josh Smith? That feels insulting to Mo Harkless.
Hey, couldn't Chris Kaman be Josh Smith?
Al Farouq Aminu?
No, he actually cares.
I'm trying to work Smoove into a pun with Al Farouq Aminu, and it's just not going. It's just not going.
I just don't think that's going to work.
Okay, well, enjoy getting peed on by the Bulldog.
Yeah, and enjoy watching the Rockets have fecal matter all over themselves. Thanks, Matt.
Thanks, Matt.